Alice. I'm Sia. I'm an alcoholic, too. I confiscate cell phones. I love it. So I want to thank you. No, I'm just taking my coat off. Don't get worried. Yeah. Oh, thanks a bunch. My sobriety date is January 30th, 1983. Thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want to thank Mark for inviting me here. And this is a great group. I've been here before when I was young and beautiful, so you may not recognize me, you know. And I want to thank Jim for coming with me. And it's just great to be here, Jimmy. Thanks, thanks. You know, I get what you said. I get what you said. And I want to welcome the new folks or anybody who's here feeling kind of desperate. I felt pretty desperate. And you know something? That was the missing ingredient for me. So this is my third time in AA, and it's why I'm still here, part of it. The desperation made me listen, made me do stuff I didn't want to do, because what I didn't want to do more was die. It became clear to me I was going to die. It wasn't something in the book. It wasn't something you were talking about while I was thinking about myself. It was happening to me, you know, and so I am an alcoholic. I'm also a recovering know-it-all, because part of the problem... Some identification, sounds like. I mean, we say we have an allergy of the body and an obsession of the mind. And I was like, yeah, I get that. When I drink, I get an allergy for my boyfriend and an obsession for yours. You know, give the book to somebody who needs it. Just trying to blow it off. But you know what? I got this thing. And I just felt like when you told me that, you said it's a fatal, progressive, incurable malady. I thought, oh, we'll see, you know. But if a doctor... or somebody that I respected, because I tried not to respect you. I didn't respect anybody. I didn't respect myself. And so when you guys said that to me, if a doctor had said that to me, I think I'd have started crying, you know, or called my family or somebody. But I just tried to pretend it ain't so. I'm an exception to the rule. And when I got sober this time, my sponsor, who was Clancy, said, you know, your case is not different, Sia. And that is not a big deal to say. But that is a life or death thing to understand, that I have this like you have it, or I don't know what you're doing here on this nice Friday night. And I'm listening carefully. I'm still here to learn. You know, I am a recovering know-it-all, as I said, and the longer I'm here, the more I learn, and it makes me more useful to you, hopefully, you know. And if you get nothing out of my share, you helped me out by letting me be here. But I hope you get something, because you've done a lot with me. You've done a lot with, you know, redecorating me or whatever you want to call it. So I will tell you what I used to be like and what happened and what I'm like now. And you can't get there from here. We say that. We say that, and it's true for me. I was born fed up, I think, would be the right thing to say. Right away, you know, it didn't work out. I'm a person, I hate people. I mean, what are they for, you know? They're like looking at me, like you're looking at me. And they're thinking things without my permission, and I know you ain't thinking good things about me. That's how I always felt. And so it's a tough gig. You know, and so I was born fed up, and I think there were some things missing. One of them is we talk about identification in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is essential to me that I felt a part of here. It took me a little while to get out of here and in the room and listen, but identification, I think at this point in my sobriety, here's what I believe. People, normal people identify. They don't use that word, but I think they identify in the places I was not. Like, I did not identify with my family. I don't know how you say that to your family, but I just didn't feel a part of it. And that's what you said. And I, wow, you actually said it out loud. You know what I mean? And I did not identify with my family. My family were nice-looking folks, and I was this tall, skinny thing with buck teeth and scraggly hair. That's a direct quote from a police report, okay? So I'm not making things up. You know, I mean, I guess, I don't know if there's any policemen here tonight. Maybe they do creative writing in the academy, I'm not sure, but that was the deal. So, and I'm an alcoholic, and that means I don't just overdrink. I overmarry, I overlike people who underlike me, I overdraft, I underdress, I oversleep. You know, I get it wrong. I get it wrong, and I got witnesses, these things called people. And I'm furious. I'm just a real angry person. And one of the folks I was overmarried to said to me one time, you know something, Sia? I actually think you are the angriest person I have ever met. To which I replied, that makes me angry, you know, because that's all I got. That's all I got. So I didn't identify with my family, and then I went to kindergarten. And I'm talking now about spiritual malady, because I had spiritual malady before I picked up a drink. I went to kindergarten, and then there were those things called people in kindergarten, you know, and they were looking at me like, you're looking at me, and thinking things I didn't want them to think. And my problem in kindergarten is there were like too many of them to kill, you know. That's how I kind of problem solve. And so I don't have skills for living. And this is something Clancy said to me, too. You know, I came in AA thinking I had a drinking problem. And if you're here and you think you got a drinking problem, AA is going to work great for you. But what he said to me is, see, you got a living problem. And you know what that boils down to for somebody like me? I'm alive. That's a problem. That's why I need a program. I don't know how to do it. And it took me an awful long time and an awful lot of suffering to get to that place. I'll tell you something. I think alcoholism is an excellent teacher if you survive the lesson. You know, it learned me a lot. And I brought that big, huge problem in here, and you guys helped me with it. But before I got here, I grew up in an alcoholic home. It ain't why I'm alcoholic, but I saw it. Here's what I saw. I drank my way into AA, but I saw alcoholism. I didn't know that's what I was looking at. But there was nothing about it to recommend it to me. I don't know what you were exposed to. This was my father. He was a self-professed alcoholic. And the other word that's a big word in AA that impresses me is powerlessness. And, you know, when I looked at my dad, there's no way my dad could be powerless. My dad, at the time he lived in the world, was about one of 17 people that size on the planet. I'm just saying. But my dad was 6'7". My dad played All-American basketball in Madison Square Garden. He was a gifted athlete. He got attention in the newspapers. But he was an alcoholic, you know. And I will say also, alcoholic men are very charismatic. I should know, I've married too many of you and dated all of you practically, you know. And my dad was the first one. He just was great. Except when he drank. And when he drank, what happened is what happens to us, you know. Bad things happen, weird things happen. And you know what happens with alcoholism, the way, I don't know how you add it up, but we get removed. You know, it ain't personal. It's an illness. It does what it does. And my father got removed. And so did I. You know, if you're like driving drunk like we do, we ain't the only people who drive drunk, but you get removed from the car. Or how about you show up for work, maybe you're drinking on the job, maybe you got a hangover from the night before. I got removed. How about you can't make the car payment? How about you can't pay the rent? You get removed. How about you don't show up for the relationship? I don't know about you, but they file. You know, that is what happened. And it happened to my dad, and I hated it. And alcoholism is a family illness. And my mother was affected by it. All the family was affected by it. And my mother was this crazy person. The ism drove her crazy, too. I didn't even understand that. All I knew is I was extremely unhappy in my home. And I thought things like, doesn't somebody know what's going on around here? Isn't somebody going to do something? That's how I felt. That's how I felt about it. And so I was this disenfranchised kid. And when disenfranchised kids, when they are disenfranchised, sometimes they join gangs, which I did. I don't know if anybody here joined a gang. The problem is, and I didn't know this was my problem, but it was you that said it to me, wherever you go see it. So I brought myself into this gang. And, you know, we read the 12 traditions here, but we ain't the only group that has, like, customs and ways we do stuff. And they had these things. They had these things like gangs. Some gangs have colors. And this gang had colors. They were ugly. And I felt it was important for me to tell them. You know what I mean? Defiance is my outstanding characteristic. And I started telling them some other stuff. And they started to pay attention because, you know, I was not respecting them. And just so you know how dangerous I am here, this gang is also known as Girl Scouts, okay?
Yeah, just watch it, okay?
And so I was doing something funny with the cookie money. If you know anything about Girl Scouts, this is a big deal for them. I was like cooking the books. And so when they found that out, you know, that was their way to get rid of me. So sharing in a general way, I got uninvited to be a Girl Scout. And you know, the book talks about a lot of things, but something it talks about is this is the beginning of a fatal progression. That refers to the trajectory of our drinking. But it also could have applied to a pattern that set itself in my life. and that was that I became uninvited pretty much to every organization I became a part of, up to and including my own family, you know. And when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, if anybody had that problem and it's bothering you, let me tell you something. I got my family back. I didn't even want my family back, but I got my family back. You know, AA does this thing, like, without your permission. So just watch it. So anyway, that's how it was going for me. I wasn't happy. And when I was 17 or 18, I was in a local college watering hole. I was not feeling a part of, once again, and I couldn't stand it, you know? And so I took a drink. It was a beer, not a big deal. It was a beer. And what I'm going to tell you is I couldn't tell if it was the first drink or the second glass of beer or the middle of the glass or the bottom of the glass or the bottom of the pitcher or the bottom of the evening. I don't know. But somewhere along the line, this problem I had all my life of looking at you in kindergarten, looking at you in Girl Scouts, looking at you in church and your family, you know, we compare and despair, and you look like you were having a good time. I had a funeral going on in my heart. You know, we talk about obsession of the mind. That was my first obsession. That problem, that night, like, packed its bag and put its hat on and walked out the back door of my life. I'm going to tell you something. If you have a problem as big as that was to me and you find an answer to it, I'm going to get my hands on that answer as often as I can. And so I began to drink as often as I could. I began to take geographics. You know, a lot of us, suicide's a geographic for me. It is for a lot of us. It's the quickest way out of town. I just happen to be just as bad at dying as I am at living. So here I am bugging you, probably. And I started taking geographics. I grew up in Montana, and we have reservations there. I started drinking on the reservations because of my behavior when I'm drinking. I don't know what you're like when you're drinking, but I'm kind of a problem. There's a couple of things I do. First of all, I like men a lot, as I mentioned. And I might have been born with Adidas on. I don't know. It's just something I think about, because here's the deal. I'm in a hurry, so I don't need your name. If I like you, I just let you know. You know, I just take my clothes off if I'm drinking. And the problem is, like, one time I did that at a wedding reception, okay? And I was not the entertainment, so it was not a good moment. So that's what I am like. The other way I am is if you don't go along with my program, I get kind of upset. And I chase you with a knife. Now, yeah. The thing is, I never worked at Benihana's. I don't know martial arts, so I don't know how to use a knife. And, you know, I felt pretty hard done when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember thinking I had the worst break in the world. And some old-timer this time said to me, you know what, Sia, if your life is somebody else's fault, AA ain't going to work for you. And, you know, that scared me. That scared me a lot. And so I would put myself in these situations, and I'd be after this person with a knife, and I started to see my life a little differently. Now, I ain't talking about thousands of men, but it was a pattern. And here's what came to mind. Things began to come to mind that helped me see things a little differently. Not one of those guys turned around and called me out and said, oh, yeah, let's see what you got, because, you know, I would have been in trouble. I started to notice stuff like that. Then there was this thing with my mom, which I'll get to in a minute. But when I drink, basically the effect produced for me is I get hope. You know, I'm a spiritually bankrupt person. I got nothing with a hole in it. And alcohol gave me hope. And so I stay out all night. I want to feel that feeling till the end of the line. And at this point in my family life, my parents had separated. And so my mom is now a single parent. She has problems financially. She's got kids younger than me in the house, and here I am traipsing in the morning. So one of my brothers took it upon himself to be the man of the house, I guess, and he called me out for that behavior. And, you know, I don't take that from anybody. I'll kill you. I'll kill the whole family, you know. And we got in this fist fight, and my mom had to get between us, and my mom had to ask me to leave. You know, I became, like the book says, the unwelcome hanger-on. And so now I'm drinking in Beverly Hills. But here's the thing I wanted to mention about my mom. You know, it's a self-centered illness, you said to me, and that offended me. I thought, of course I'm self-centered. I'm trying to save my life here. But as I was with you longer and heard you talk, and here's what I came to understand. It came to mind that My mother, I never wondered how she was doing. I'll tell you something. I've lived a long time sober, and I was out there for a while drinking. Stuff happened to me. My heart has been broken in life. And I imagine my mother's heart might have been broken. Never occurred to me. Never asked her, how you doing, Mom? Can I help you out? If I did, it was in a blackout. Never. And when I thought of this, I realized that's what you're talking about, that it's the me show. And it ain't the me show. It's the we show of Alcoholics Anonymous. You taught me that here, and you were able to help me translate that into the world. And so people invite me back, like you guys invited me back. I hope I never get used to that, because I was not being invited back, and I didn't understand. That's alcoholism. I didn't understand. So anyway, now I'm on a geographic, and I'm drinking in Beverly Hills. And the thing about that is there's another little phrase in the book. Wow, that got a lot louder. Do you want me to burst into song? I might actually sound amplified. There's a line in the book. It's whistling in the dark. Do you know that one? And here's what that means to me. It means to me that, you know, every time I went out to drink wasn't going great now. Some things started to happen. I wasn't vetting the people I went out with, and I would have to compromise myself sometimes. I would be cornered by circumstance. That's what was happening to me. And I was drinking in Beverly Hills, but I was drinking at the bus stop in Beverly Hills, is my point. That's kind of a different picture. And I just wouldn't look at my drinking, couldn't look at my drinking at that point. So I ended up drinking at this rough bar downtown in Los Angeles. It's called The Good Night, and it ain't, so I wouldn't look it up if you're planning to revisit the situation. It's a rough bar, and sometimes when young women drink in rough bars, stuff happens. And what happened in this bar, there was another young woman who drank there. I was not friends with her. Her name was Debbie. I was not friends with other women because men, to me, were human-sized credit cards, okay? And one night, Debbie ended up with her head blown off in the vacant lot behind the building this bar was located in. I don't know what kind of violence was in your drinking. That was not typical of mine. It frightened me, and it frightened me because she was a lot like me. You know, she was a lot like me. And what I realized, it could have been me instead of her. And this is when I started to think about what, like if you said something to me about my drinking, I ain't taking it. But I started to think, maybe I should chill. Maybe I should back off. Maybe I have had more than my fair share. This is what I thought. But what happened, I don't know what happened when you started to try to control your drinking. Now I just started to drink behind my own back now instead of yours. Yeah. And it is a funny turn of phrase, but let me tell you something. Of all the things that have happened in my life, and there's been stuff that happened that broke my heart, and people died that I didn't want to, and, you know, reversals of fortune. But of everything that ever happened in my life and everything that ever will happen in my life, the worst thing that will ever have happened in my life was the inability to stop drinking when I wanted to. Because, you know, this is the thing that separates man from animal, the right to choose. And I didn't have that anymore. I felt like an animal. I lived like an animal. I hated my guts. It's what we call in Alcoholics Anonymous the bondage of self. And there were a couple of things that propelled me into Alcoholics Anonymous. First of all, if you go home, God forbid that you're burglarized, but you'd probably notice. I was burglarized, but I, like, didn't notice for a couple of weeks. Come on, you know, who lives like that? So I just felt like I wasn't worth the paper I was printed on. And I'm looking out of the window of the place where I was living at the time, and I happened to see this guy walking down the sidewalk with a shotgun. I'm from Montana. I know a shotgun when I see one. And this was a city street. I thought that was pretty out there. And I would want to say to you, I was lucky in retrospect, but I think sometimes we get a break in the universe. And the reason I say that is because when this guy crossed the street, came in the courtyard and up the stairs to my door, I'd seen the guy. I knew he had a shotgun. So I didn't do anything except get real quiet on my side of the door. And my mind was racing. I was thinking, what's this guy doing here? You know, I didn't recognize him. Had I done something to him in a blackout? Is that what he was doing at my door? Was it the people I lived with? Because I lived with those kind of people. It would have been fair for them to say the same thing. You know, I didn't know, and my mind was racing, like Bill Wilson talks about in his story. And I just was real quiet on my side of the door. And it felt like 1,000 years, that moment or minute. And then I heard footsteps going back down the stairs for some reason. And this person walked out of my life. And I don't know when you wanted help, but that's when I wanted help. And you know what that moment reminded me of? It reminded me of something that began to happen way too alarmingly often, where I would come to or wake up, however you characterize it, and I started saying to myself, I ain't doing this anymore. I'm not going there with those. I'm going to turn this around. This is going to stop. And I would say that again and again and again. It never changed. I'm talking about obsession of the mind. There's no off button for that in my case. You know, what do? Bash your head against the wall. You know, get run over by a car. Dang, there's just nothing. And so I was in this position of desperation. And I don't know if anybody ever helped you before you came to AA. People tried to help me. I don't want that help, okay? I felt patronized by people. But here's the thing about Alcoholics Anonymous. I got no defense against the first drink. But I got no defense against Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the deal. That's amazing to me. I came in here and, you know, I feel patronized by professionals. Here's the thing. I'm not a helpable person. And I didn't know why that was. I did not know. I mean, there's people that tried to help me before you guys did. There's the folks with a little clerical collar, you know, who would try to help me see the world through a more spiritual lens. And then there's the folks with, you know, diplomas on the wall, and they're going to help you with your feelings and your emotions. Then there's the ones with the gun and the badge, and okay, I know what you're doing here, and let's go. But here's what I knew about every single one of those people. Underneath all that jazz, they were just another lousy human being just like me, you know. You can't help somebody like that. And so that was me. That was me. And when I came into AA, you know, we ain't professionals here. I didn't feel patronized. You said to me, Sia, it's an even playing field. You ain't a charity case. If you're new here, you ain't a charity case. We're all trying to get a day here. You know what I mean? We're all trying to get a day. Some people got more time and they have experience and they share it. So they get to stay here. It's one alcoholic talking to another and the help goes both ways. And I had no defense against that. A remarkable gift. So here's the thing. I was someplace waiting for the obsession of the mind to hit because that's what ran my life. I don't know what ran yours. And I want to talk about this for a minute because the reason I am in AA for the third time is I did not understand alcoholism. I underestimated it, I guess I would say. I lumped it in with addiction. And I'm going to tell you something. They do that out there and they got a right to it. And many among us are also addicts. But alcoholism is a different beast. And here's what I came to realize in this particular thing. There is, you know, Dr. Silkworth, he's in the big book because he did like this little case study, if you want to call it, on 40,000 of us dying around him. And here's the difference between addiction and alcoholism with Alcoholics Anonymous history. Addiction is normal. Addiction is normal. You use an addictive substance. My grandma does. My dog does. We're going to get addicted to it. The thing with alcoholism is it's abnormal. Fewer than 10% of people who drink become alcoholic like us. Fewer than 10%. And Silkworth is watching us, and here's what he came to understand. There's this other feature of alcoholism, the afterburn of the drink, obsession of the mind. Obsession of the mind. I'm up here sober, man, but I still got alcoholism. And it manifests in obsession of the mind. Let me ask you something. I got an allergy other than alcohol. I got one to penicillin. Here's what I'll do. I'll stake my life on this. I am never scoring a shot of penicillin again in this lifetime. That will never happen. How about people who are allergic to peanuts? People who, if they eat a peanut, their throat swells up, they die. You think they're going to eat another peanut again? You think a peanaholic is going to pursue a peanut? They're going to pursue a peanut into the gates of insanity and death. Ain't happening. So why would we do that to the point of death, which is what we do? That's what we do. And it's because of obsession of the mind. And now that I am sober, I still have that feature in my thinking. And it doesn't necessarily attach itself to a drink.
It attaches itself in the defects. It attaches itself in things like in the nightly review, it says, be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, and morbid reflection. You know why? Because we don't worry like regular people. We like pitch a tent over something, you know what I mean? And it's on night and day. It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare. So that's the deal. And I didn't understand that difference. I did not know that. I know it now. And so I look for obsession of the mind in my thinking. I come to you, and it is held in abeyance a day at a time with drinking. I do not have that obsession. But it's looking for customers. It's looking for business right in here. You know what I'm saying? So there. Okay. So I was sitting someplace waiting for the obsession of the mind to hit. And I read about Alcoholics Anonymous in the local community service section of the newspaper or something. And here's what they said. They said, Alcoholics Anonymous, we hold hands, we pray, we don't drink anymore. The immediate thought that came to mind was, that's as corny as hell. But then this other voice spoke, and I have heard other people in Alcoholics Anonymous say this happened to them, and it was a quiet voice. It didn't seem like my voice, and it said, I want to go. And it got the swing vote. So I went to the first meeting. And it was a nice meeting. It was a daytime meeting. The folks had their stuff together, like you guys do. You know, they had greeters. When they found out I was new, they might have guessed, how did they do that? Ha ha. You know, and somebody gave me their phone number, said they'd sponsor me, and they put me in the front of the room. And the meeting starts, and you know what? I got an attack of self-centered fear, just like I did in kindergarten. And I wanted to get the hell out of there, but I was too embarrassed to get up and leave. Embarrassment is one of my 100 forms of fear. I heard nothing in that meeting. And, you know, the meeting ended. I'd come for help. I ain't taking your book. I ain't calling that lady to be my sponsor, whatever that is. I don't give a dang about your steps or traditions. You know, I'm out of here. And I went home. And then something happened a couple hours later. This is my story, so this is my take on it. Here's what I noticed. That thing that I don't know about you, but in my case, I cannot pay away, pray away, outwit, negotiate with, hide from obsession of the mind. That thing was gone. And the only way that thing went anyplace was if I had a drink, I had a check, you know, I did not have a drink. And you would never have made me believe Jimmy did that or an individual alcoholic, Mark did that. No, no way. But something happened. I had to concede that to myself. And I'll tell you something. I've been looking over my shoulder ever since. And that moment has been the dividing line of my life before and after. I drank again. But I couldn't forget you. I couldn't forget what that was, you know. That was an amazing thing. And the obsession was lifted, and I was ecstatic. You know, I was leaping out of bed in the morning. I was going to live my life. But here's the problem. As I said earlier, if you're here with the drinking problem, AA is going to work great for you. I got this other thing. It's called alcoholism. It's not a synonym. It's not a euphemism. It's a thing. It's a thing. And the problem with it was that I didn't understand the problem with it. And here's what I equate it to. Now I understand. It's like, to me, the iceberg, where the tip of the iceberg is the drinking. You know, the thing that's the unifying force in our community. But the whole underbelly of the iceberg is spiritual malady. And that is what sunk the Titanic, and that's what sunk me too. Because I was full of self-reliance. And the book flat out says self-reliance failed us. I'll tell you how it failed me. I was full of self-confidence, and I went to see somebody I always had a bad history with. You know, we have this little saying in AA, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results, is insanity. And it doesn't just refer to drinking, it refers to some of my behavior. So I went to see this person, and I got mad at him, like I always did. I don't know about you, but if I don't have enough program in me, I'm a resentment machine. I'm like a problem factory. And I got mad at this person, and I blew my sobriety. They were probably fine. Then I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, because I wanted that thing to happen, the surcease of the obsession. What line do you stand in for that cup of coffee? You know, I had no idea how to make that happen. And my alcoholism was way, way bigger than my program. I wasn't talking to you. As Jimmy said, you ain't got a sponsor. Yes, you do. They're an idiot, you know, absolutely in my case. And so I got swept out the door by my alcoholism. I was not a victim. I was a volunteer. It was that know-it-all thing. You know, I got this. I got this. And you know where I got this? I ended up in London. and I was modeling, is what I called it. I don't know what you'd have called it if you'd seen me in action.
You got to dress it up so you don't feel bad and everything. And I'm still in the I can't club, you know. I can't stop drinking. I can't show up for work. I can't. That's step one. I can't. There's no shame in I can't. It's understanding powerlessness. And so I stayed out all night. I show up for this job, and I looked terrible. And I don't know what their problem was. They were, like, overconfident, let's just say that. And they took pictures, and they got the pictures back. And you know what I looked like? My face was bloated. My eyes were bloodshot. Not a vision for you, haha. And the client was mad, and they called the agency. And you know, it ain't the first time I didn't do well in that job. I'd, like, walk down runways with dresses on backwards, walk down in my shoes. They had it, you know, so they said, get out. And like, as I was getting out, the Bank of England called, and I owed them money. I thought I had made a lot of money. You know, it's that thing in the book that you can't separate the true from the false, and that is a terrifying feeling if you're self-reliant. So here's the deal. The book says God's everything or God's nothing, and you know when God's everything for an alcoholic like me? When there's nobody else to call. And there'd been a woman in that business that had seen me in action, and I had gotten her phone number, and I called her. And she took me back to Alcoholics Anonymous. Here's the problem with that sobriety. I am that recovering know-it-all, but not that recovering at that time. I was going to AA, but there's a thing in the book that talks about there's a difference between a demand and a request. And I have certain things that you should do for me. Things should happen, you know, because I'm giving you the privilege of me being amongst you or some ridiculous thing that I wouldn't articulate in the light of day or the dark of night either. But anyway, the deadline came, whatever that was, and you hadn't delivered. And so there's another thing the book says. There's one who has all power. May you find him now. And, you know, his name that day was Gerald. And the reason it was Gerald is because Gerald would buy tickets to take me out of the country. You know, a geographic, that time to go feeling. Anybody else get that time to go feeling? Well, I had that. And so we're at Gatwick Airport, and Gerald's at the ticket counter. And right in front of me, the Federales come swooping down, and they arrest Gerald. What was more upsetting to me is they arrested the tickets. You know, it's that thing in the book, take a trip, not take a trip. And I didn't have enough program for not take a trip. And I was mad. And, you know, I did what I do. When I don't have enough program, I blew my sobriety. And then I went back to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was so mad about it. I thought, what are you doing here with these people? You know how you try to, these losers, these no, what are you doing here? And I didn't want you telling me what I was doing there. I was sick and tired of you calling the shots. So I sat in that meeting steaming and sort of under the effect produced, and I was thinking and thinking and thinking. And here's where I got to. I cannot tell you what meeting it was. I cannot tell you what person said it. I do not know what they said. But somewhere along the line, I did that thing. I crossed the invisible line from me to identification. I identified here. This place became my home. I had not had that feeling with my family or kindergarten or church or Girl Scouts, any of those places. I had it with you behind my own back. And so I was in trouble, and I came home. That's what it was. And in that meeting, there was somebody I'd never seen before. And so I was a little more honest with this person than I might normally be. And they listened politely like we do, you know. And at the end of whatever I was saying, they wrote a phone number down. They said, you know, Sia, if you got 6 months of your life to give, why don't you work the program as Bill sees it, not as Sia sees it. They weren't being a smartass about it. They were just straight up. And then they walked away. And in that moment, I would say to you, I was standing at that turning point that we describe and how it works, you know? And it's, excuse me. And I'm going to ask God's protection and care with complete abandon, or the unsaid thing is, I ain't. And, you know, I've been here a long time now in this sobriety, and I have given people my phone number, new folks, and say, give me a call, I'd be glad to help you. And sometimes, you know what they say to me? They say they can't. And you know what I know that's the wrong verb is, because I've been taught honesty here. The real verb is, you won't. And that's a life or death difference. And you know how I know that? Because I can get in the dang car and come up here with Jim. Thanks for driving with me, Jim, and being here. Like Mark asked me and do it.
I can dial the phone if I have the thought of a drink. I can participate here. There's certain things only I can do to save my own life. You cannot do it as much as you may want to. There are new people I wish were here. They ain't here, and they're never going to be here now. You know, that's it. And so that day, there was no other offer on the table. And so I dialed a stranger's phone number. And this person knew what they were talking about. They were an alcoholic, like we know, you know, experience. And they're talking away, and here's my problem, the know-it-all. I already heard this stuff. They're talking away. I've heard it. It's good, but I've heard it. You know, my heart starts to sink. There's nothing to hang my hat on. And then out of nowhere, they say to me, and this was Clancy, and he knew what the hell he was talking about, I'll tell you. He was a sinister, sort of small, kind of vicious person, passing himself off as my sponsor. But at that moment, you know, he said to me, you know, if you want to clean up your axia, maybe we can help you. You know what that is? You know, I was ready to hear it too. It's that thing we call in Alcoholics Anonymous, the flimsy reed. That was it. There was nothing else. And so I just got on a plane, and I came here to Los Angeles, and I joined the Pacific Group. One alcoholic yelling at another, you know. And it is funny, man, but I needed them. And I hated them. I'm consistent. You know, I just hated them. But here's what I hated more, the idea that I might die. And I'm going to tell you about going to my first meeting to their home group. Big group, you know. And they were so nice to me. Clancy had people give me rides. I didn't have a car. When I got sober, probably like a lot of you, you know, by the time I got sober this time, I had been uninvited to one entire country. Thank you very much. And I was living illegally in the country where I came to you from. I mentioned a couple other things, like I was uninvited to blah, blah, blah. And then I had a secret, like we do, and my secret was I happened to be married to two people at the same time. And when one of them found out, you know, I tried to treat it like an accounting problem, and they wouldn't go for it. They said, like, what do you mean you lost count? It ain't a high number, 1, 2, you know. And so I had no way of talking my way out of something, and I knew it. And so they gave me rides and put me up. And anyway, we arrive at the meeting. It's huge. They don't look like alcoholics. There were like 1,000 people in the room. You don't look like alcoholics to me either. So I got this attack of self-centered fear, and the person who gave me the ride noticed, and he said, well, you know, you're here. You might as well go into the meeting. And, you know, here's what I thought. I don't say what I think sometimes, which is maybe smart. I thought, easy for you to say, dirtbag. You know, you got the car keys. So anyway, I go in the meeting, and I sit down in the meeting, and I just shut down, just like I did in kindergarten. And at the end of that meeting, I get up, and I'm making a beeline for the exit. I would love to ask that person I was all those years ago, where are you going now, Sia? You know, I just told you about the wreckage of my present. Where are you going now? And this guy intercepted me, and he says to me, how would you like to take a coffee commitment? I felt like saying to that guy, how would you like me to kick your ass, you know? But I was too chicken to say it. So instead, I came up with a lie. I said, well, I can't take it. I'm only going to be here 2 weeks. And he saved my life, because here's what he said. Okay, take it for 2 weeks. And I couldn't come up with a lie fast enough, you know. I felt like I'd signed something in blood with the mafia. Oh, I was so, so upset. And then something happened for me there. The thing that eluded me all the other times I've been in AA, the thing I now protect against all things, you know, the $100 word in Alcoholics Anonymous for me, the unicorn of my sobriety, surrender. I think I didn't surrender. I think I was surrendered by the sobriety in that room, by the commitment in that room. You know, this is a spiritual program. I was spiritually illiterate. Spiritually, how could I know about that? But it affected me. And I just couldn't go out there one more time. I couldn't think of a place to go. That felt terrible that night, but it was such a gift. And you know, it reminds me, this surrender thing, because I had trouble with spiritual terms and relating to that. What it reminds me of is one time when I was drowning. I'm an excellent swimmer, and I underestimated a situation. Just like alcoholism, you know, I underestimated it. And I'm drowning. And here's the thing, the body wants to live. It doesn't even ask you if you want to live. It wants to live. And so it fights and it fights, it fights, it fights, it fights. But then, you know, there's nothing left. And I was drifting down wherever I was going to end up. And suddenly, out of nowhere, there was this something to stand on so I could get my head out of water. And I got some air, and I lived. And it was a surprise. You're such a surprise to me. You're a shock to me. You have promises. Those promises come true. They happen. If I'm here, if everything feels against me, this is thinking, not you thinking. I'm the one who came in here knowing everything, so I know nothing, or I wouldn't have ended up here. And you helped me build a life. I cannot believe what you made here. You know, you've ruined my reputation because I hate people. And now I'm like this big goober. I cry all the time. I love people. You know, I keep coming back to figure out how you did this to me. This is basically what's going on here. And I got about 5 minutes, so I want to tell you something, maybe only one thing I got time for, that really meant something to me, where I could see how you were changing me. I did not have the obsession to drink. That forever is enough. And when I'm having a bad day and I think life ain't going my way or things feel hopeless, I always ask myself, how come you ain't got the obsession to drinks yet? God is here. You know, I don't know what God is to any of you. You gave me the dignity to decide what it is for myself. And I appreciated that. And here's what I found out. Here is what I believe. Whatever God is, God's everywhere. God's got to be in the drink. If God wasn't in the drink, how did you ever show up in my life? How did I ever find you? And so I have this to lean against when I lose my way, and I have you. And there were things you told me I needed to do. You know, you said you got to get rid of your resentments. You got to work this program on them. And there were certain things I was never going to give up. And I hated my mother. And you said to me, you know what, you need to take contrary action there, Sia, because that's called resentment. And the book says it is the number one offender. If you haven't noticed, that's a pretty high number, you know. And so I started taking contrary action. And it was very contrary to me. I did not feel like it. But I did it because I wanted to stay here with you. And the time came, and I don't know why it was this particular day. I can't even tell you what day it was, but here's what happened. Maybe there was not such a big chip on my shoulder with my mom. And my mom told me something. She said when she was a little girl, she went someplace, and she was sexually assaulted. And she tried to tell her mother, and her mother didn't believe it, I guess. And, you know, she told me that, and then she just fell apart. And I was looking at my mom, and here's what I was thinking about. When I came in Alcoholics Anonymous, something like that happened to me, too. Happens to a lot of kids. And I was never going to tell anybody about that. I was going to die with that secret. And then Alcoholics Anonymous, the people who couldn't stop drinking either, the people who ain't drinking said to me, Sia, you're going to stay as sick as the secrets you choose to keep. You want to pitch a tent over something you hate, or you want to give it away to whatever it is that helps you not drink today. That's what you said to me. And so as I looked at my mother, here's what I realized. I'd been healed. I did not have that problem anymore. And maybe there was no Alcoholics Anonymous for my mother, but maybe I could be the Alcoholics Anonymous. There was a willingness that came there. And I think of Cubby Selby when I talk about this, a great member of AA that's gone to the big meeting in the sky. Cubby said that the most sacred ground is where an ancient hatred is turned into a current love. Now look, I didn't change my mind. I didn't wise up. Things happen in Alcoholics Anonymous that cannot happen. They have happened to me, and you talk to me about what happened to you when I was new here. And I see these things all the time in my life, too, still today. And so I am here to thank you very much for that 12-step call. Thank you for my life. Thank you for my ability to be helpful to other people. It is everything to me, and I am incredibly grateful. Thanks again.